Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is singer-songwriter Emily Aaron. Aaron is a recent transplant from Los Angeles, and she's made quite a splash in the local music scene with her well-crafted, intimate songs and her debut CD called Time and Space. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, you studied classical piano for a time, but you knew you didn't have the discipline to continue on this vein. Why did you decide that, and you decided to pick up the guitar instead?
Yeah, well, I mean, I took piano. I started playing around 4.5, 5 because my older sister was playing. And so we took lessons every week, and I guess I have a pretty competitive spirit. So I was making some progress, and we moved around quite a bit, but everywhere we'd go, I'd get a new teacher. And I liked it. I liked playing and making progress and getting the positive feedback from the teachers and the stickers in my book. But
Did you like the whole classical genre, though, or was that something that you didn't take to?
I think I liked it just because that's what the material was that the teachers were presenting to me. And then I took some breaks from lessons for a while because I felt like it was too much pressure. And at some points in childhood, it's really the discipline of practicing every day is just no fun.
So, I've heard that.
Yeah, so I would take breaks and then I quit once from my teacher, Mrs. Booth, and I felt so guilty that I went back crying and I said, I'm going to keep taking lessons. And I think I was around 8 or 9 then.
Uh-huh. But you eventually decided you wanted to take up the guitar. So
I did.
Tell us how that happened.
So I went to an arts high school I went to a few high schools because we moved. The arts high school, I was there for piano. But it was so clear, I just didn't have the chops to. I was around really, really talented pianists, and at that time I started listening to more folk music. My sister introduced me to Leonard Cohen and Joni Mitchell. And
you said that when your sister sang Leonard Cohen's song Suzanne, it opened up your mind.
Yeah, I mean it was so moving, and it was a song that made her think of me because I had had a pretty traumatic experience when I was in El Salvador. And it felt personal, but also transforming. And it was something you could listen to over and over again and hear new meaning in. So
yeah, I understand that. That's one of those songs that's real poetry.
Yeah. It's funny because in college, I realized it's in the Norton Anthology of Poetry, which was really cool to me that it had been recognized, I guess, at that level. So that started making me think, okay, I know I love music, and I'm so glad I know the piano, but it might not be the right mode of expression for me because I didn't feel free on it. I didn't feel free to create on it. I was very dependent on reading music to play piano.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
So when
did you start writing?
Towards the end of high school, did little song snippets that were really ridiculous. And one was called I Wish I Were a Coffee Bean, and it was 10 seconds long. And it was, I wish I were a coffee bean, never to be seen by you, you coffee lover.
You must have been mad at somebody.
It was just, I don't know. So it was ridiculous, but my little sister really liked it. So I'd play around with different ideas. And I had a guitar at that point that my parents had bought me. And
must have discovered that is a way to express yourself. And somebody indeed found some of your words meaningful.
Right, right. And it felt encouraging. And especially because hearing, Leonard Cohen or Joni Mitchell, I mean, they were really saying so much with their lyrics, and I really liked language, too, so it felt like, okay, here's a nice combination of these interests in music and language.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can understand that interest in language. You must have that to be a songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how does the songwriting process work for you? Do you come up with a line, or do you hear some kind of a melody? Tell us.
I would say it's both. I will go through periods of having, where nothing's popping out. Oftentimes I'll hear somebody say something, or it could be hearing a really moving radio interview or This American Life, or, and maybe one word will stand out. And I just have tons of scraps of paper, as I'm sure many songwriters or writers do. And so I'll write a line down, and then sometimes I'll know that it's just I know I can follow that through to a night. Complete idea.
Hmm.
I'll just know it really stands out that much, and I'll go home and work on it and start sitting for a couple hours with the guitar just playing through some chords. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty simple so far in my, compositions.
But you also do creative writing in addition to composing songs. Do you know the difference when something's going to come out as a creative writing beginning or a song?
I kind of taken, I guess this has been my way of creative writing, the lyric writing. I was a creative writing major in college, and it was really stressful to me. I loved it, and I really admired the professors who were teaching, but I got some feedback my freshman year that, you know,
this, turned you off.
This poet, no, it just made me feel like, am I not serious enough to be a creative writer or a poet, or, you know, and this poet said, Emily, do you know the meaning of subtlety? And so it was just like, I went sort of just, you know, sad back to my dorm. And I think I found that maybe I don't have the temperament for the isolation of being just a writer. Mm-hmm. So then I would pick up my guitar, and it was like, it has its own comfort built into it to be able to strum away.
And you can use the music to convey stuff too. So less can be more.
Less can be more.
When you're writing lyrics.
Yeah, and it takes you into.
Yeah. That must have been an interesting lesson for you to learn.
Yeah, it was. So.
Now you grew up in a family, as you have said, you moved a lot because your dad worked for Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. Now does some of that travel come back to you in your writing and bring feelings and emotions up that you are writing about now?
I think so, and it definitely planted the seed of, I guess, a lifestyle, being open to change. My parents, I thought, were really courageous when I was 10. They sold the house, and he was actually heading an insurance agency at that time, and felt, I think, that while this is a secure life, you know, that it's not really the most fulfilling. So we traveled, and there are 5 kids in my family. We traveled to the South Pacific for a few months, and I think while he was exploring the next step, and my mom's adventurous and willing to go along with it. So
you must have learned a lot.
Learned a lot, and it was a really magical time as a 10-year-old to be, like, on the Great Barrier Reef, you know, watching spear fishermen use kava to make the fish drunk so they could spear them.
Oh, no.
I know. That's, I mean, it was very stimulating. And so the fact that they were willing to make these big changes, I have carried that on and continue to travel and and make changes, like leaving L.A. Mm-hmm. a little over a year ago.
It must make you more comfortable in the world, too.
I do.
You can explore different emotions in your head because you're used to being around so many different people and finding comfort there, probably.
Yeah, I think feeling very open to a variety of people and towns. I mean, the difference between Montour Falls and Ithaca, I mean, I feel very at ease in both, and they're really different, even though they're pretty close.
Well, the biggest jump is at Los Angeles to Montour
Falls. That's true. No, that's it. And a lot of people, when they hear, you know, you're from L.A., what? Like, what are you doing here? You know.
I have heard that, too.
But yeah, feeling at home in the world, I think.
Uh-huh. So. Now tell us about your CD, Time and Space. It's a result of a subscription series that you had started.
So I tried schooling a couple different times after undergrad, and I was at this music school in L.A., but only a couple weeks in, and it was very much about the music industry, and I was like, that's not, it just rubbed me the wrong way. It's not where my heart's at, you know, and I want to develop as a craftsperson, an artist. So I was sitting in my car thinking, like, okay, I just quit my job to enroll in music school, and now I don't want to be in music school. How am I going to keep doing music and keep it as a focus? So I set up a website, and people paid a subscription for a year's worth of one new song a month, basically. Mm-hmm. So I did, and it was a real challenge because I was also recording myself in my room, and I wasn't very good at that. And so it was a few different learning curves all at once.
That's an interesting idea, though.
Yeah, but
the music business has collapsed, and everybody has become an indie.
Right. And I also thought, how cool that in a world where you feel like you're just being fed pre-produced products, like where people could have a say in the new work that's being created in the world with not a lot of money and actually help create a new paradigm, you know?
Yeah, that was sort of interesting. Well, on that note, I want to have you sing a song from that Time and Space CD.
Okay.
I think you're going to sing a song called Evergreen.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell us a little bit about it?
This was one of the, I think this is a song 6. So, and I guess this is something I guess a line came to me, and then I kept working it. And just the idea that it's easy to yearn for answers outside yourself and seek them, you know, through the affirmation of other people or the guidance. And I've definitely done a lot of soul searching in my path, and the fact that it really all comes back to you and really learning more about yourself in the world. So sort of. Okay.
Great.
All right. The light is shining through you like I've never seen. Have you been kissing the sun all through the nighttime in your dreams? Or have you traveled to a golden age in the front seat of a time machine? Don't leave me here in the darkness. Take me to where the trees are evergreen, evergreen, evergreen. I told you some of my secrets, now it's your turn to talk to me. I want to know just where it is you go that makes you shine and gleam. My heart's beating on a tightrope, hope is flowing fast through my bloodstream, waiting for what your words reveal to take me where the trees are evergreen, evergreen.
Great. Now, what do you think the major drive is for a songwriter? Is it the process of writing that you love, or do you want to reveal yourself? Are you trying to connect? Do you know what the motivation is at this point?
I think it's complex. It's definitely loving the process of writing and having these breakthroughs where there's an idea that you know has potential. It's like this initial, at least for me, there's usually a lot of frustration in the beginning because I know there's this potential. There's got to be a way to, like, reveal it or unfold it. And when that happens, where it just feels right, and you're like, that's what that song should be about. And then other times it's very personal, and it is expressing either something. Sometimes I'll have a specific person in mind, but it becomes a more universal song. I think oftentimes the most personal things can be really the most universal because you're just so connected to your emotions, which are... I've always felt like if you can see it in your mind or really feel something, that means like other people can too, because it's very clear to you.
Oh, yeah, that human connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so ultimately...
I mean, it's up to you to be able to convey it because a lot of people don't have the words,
right.
Correct?
Yeah, so I would say it's all of that, and the more I try and play out, that's where I'm learning more about the connecting, which is a skill to be learned, I think, to feel... comfortable in your own skin. I mean, I'm nervous sitting here. I can feel the warble in my voice.
No.
But yeah.
You know, your songs are very intimate. Do you ever censor yourself and say, oh, wait a minute, I don't know if I want strangers to know this about me?
Mm. Yeah, well, the tricky thing having the subscription is that I've done two series so far, and I almost knew everybody personally that had signed up, you know. So yeah, I mean, I would say just the censor in me definitely felt like, wow, this is so revealing. And for the first round, an ex-boyfriend had signed up, and it was a recent, so a lot of the songs were, I was processing that grief and also feeling like I was being restrained about expressing it because I knew he was listening to the song. So I would say that's been a very real consideration.
Uh-huh.
I try to let go of it as much as possible. You know,
does that subscription series allow for people to make commentary about what you're sending them?
I send it via email so they can write back.
Did you get feedback?
I did. I got, you know, for the most part, it was people would write when they really liked a song, you know, and say, oh, you know. And my brother would make ridiculous commentary that if I didn't add drums to, you know, to my track soon, he was going to cancel his subscription. He's a drummer, so... So yeah, but mostly when people particularly liked a song, I would get some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that must have been gratifying, though.
It was, yeah.
Now you moved from Los Angeles to Montour Falls, like we said, and you said in one interview that you wanted to create a lifestyle more conducive to reflection and songwriting. What was missing from your other life?
Well, I think just the requirements for getting your basic needs met in L.A., like mm-hmm. having a job that might not totally satisfy you in order to just pay the higher rent out there.
Yeah.
And I had probably the lowest rent you could have in L.A., and I still, you know, I worked at a nonprofit. Most of these series have been while working a full-time job, so the deadline was helpful. But I thought more open space, if I can get my overhead mm-hmm. minimized and just have almost like the expression of like woodshedding, have an opportunity to really go inward and become a better musician, which I feel like is a big goal that I'm just going to chip away at over time.
Yeah.
So.
If you're just joining us, my guest is singer-songwriter Emily Aaron. Now, back to this moving from L.A. to Montour Falls. I'm from L.A. too, and I found that it's a very outer world focus
mm-hmm.
and a self-conscious focus. And I can imagine what that does to somebody who's trying to be creative.
Yeah, and it's a great place for there are hundreds and hundreds of venues to play out. I mean, it is. Once you've done the inner work, I think, and you're ready to put it out there, it takes a lot out of you to always have that sort of outward focus, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. And yet it's very stimulating because of that at the same time. So.
And there are a lot of people out there trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of competition.
A lot of competition,
so you're
yeah.
always probably comparing yourself and wondering if you add up.
Yeah, and I think for some people, I work really slowly. I mean, I think I'm learning to accept that and not resist it. And there's a faster pace out there. So this demand to develop, I mean, I sometimes just sit, you know, and maybe strum the same thing like hundreds of times before I know how to move forward with it. So
mm-hmm.
I kind of needed an environment that would be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. And then when you think you finished a song, do you play it for somebody? Is there somebody's ear that you have listened to it? Or do you immediately put it on the subscription series and let it go?
No, I definitely, I mean, my family's been great. Whoever's around here, it's my mom. I've been bugging her with the new stuff, and they've been really. I mean, my siblings.
And
they usually hear it first.
And the brother that's the drummer, is he still trying to get you to have more of a rock sound?
I think he's. He would love it if I had a song with drums, which you know I might try to do this time around. But I think he's also very supportive. And
well, yeah, that's what you need, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's a hard life you're embarking on.
Yeah, it's I definitely feel like I need to be doing this, and I also wonder why I'm doing this at times because it can be isolating, or you put a lot of pressure on yourself, and then. The more pressure you put on yourself, the harder it is to be creative. And
and then you have the outer world is going to start telling you things, too. And then you have to decide, oh, my gosh.
What to tune in or tune out.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, in addition to music, you're also a gardener and a practitioner of Chinese medicine. And
well,
talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, in Luke's article, which was so sweet, I went to school for Chinese medicine. I never graduated, and I didn't practice. And the story there is... And it sort of ties in with the gardening. I've wanted a, you know, a meaningful way to make my living, and I like the idea of healing and playing that role in the world. So I'd been exposed to Chinese medicine. My dad studied when I was in middle school. Mm. And I was really interested in what he was doing. So in the back of my mind, I thought maybe I'll do that. So I enrolled in grad school and was really wrestling with the idea that this is a whole other art form, a whole other lifetime of study. Deep down, I had this desire to really go further and deeper into music. And so I really struggled with that because while this was really stimulating and fascinating, so I just, in order to put myself partly through school, you know, I started teaching piano and then got really involved with this community garden project down the street from the Chinese medicine school. And eventually I thought, you know, why don't I just teach piano and do gardening? And then I can be, the gardening's great. It's a service to the community. Plus I'll be working on the music with these students and hopefully have time to write songs. So they sort of all tied in. It's a great garden though. It's called the Learning Garden, on the Venice High School campus. And there's a website. It's a pretty, it's an acre in the city, so it's a really special place.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah.
Well, how interesting. Well, you are finding your place in the world.
Yeah. Slowly.
Now, I want to have you sing another song, and this is going to be a debut. That you've sung this around, but you've never recorded it yet. And
right.
Tell us about it. It's called It Wasn't Love, But It Was Lovely.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things where the line, I had been a friend or, you know, I guess a love interest at a certain point, had asked me to write a song for him, and we met while traveling in Spain, and it was a really nice experience, but it didn't, and he's from San Francisco, and we kind of tried to carry it on after Spain. It just wasn't meant to go any further. So I was like, I can't write him a love song. What, you know, what's the right way to capture something? And then I was running in that line, It Wasn't Love, But It Was Lovely.
That's a nice, nice title.
Thanks, yeah. And he has approved the song, so I can, you know, I don't feel weird about playing it. So that's the story.
Oh, great. Well, I want to hear it.
Okay.
That sounds fascinating.
All right.
It wasn't love, but it was lovely. Kissing under the Spanish sun, eating plums and violet candy, left a sweetness on our tongues. Wasn't love, but it was lovely just the same, just the same. You held my hand, called me darling. You cured the loneliness that I had brought to Spain and kept the broken pieces of my heart from scarring. A bus into the mountains, shared some wine and broke some bread. You showed me how to find the North Star before you carried me to bed. It wasn't love, but it was lovely. Stroking your hair beside the stream, we knew it wouldn't last forever, that it was something of a dream. It wasn't love, but it was lovely just the same, just the same. We felt our hearts glow with the morning, claimed forgetfulness of sadness so that Spain would always be the place where we felt our hearts soaring. It wasn't love, it wasn't love.
That's a really lovely song.
Thank you.
It doesn't sound like a cliche. Thing, <that way.
laughs> Thank you.
Yeah, really nice. And so the guy that you wrote this for, he knows about it.
He did. I sent it to him because, you know, I mean, we've stayed friends, so, uh-huh. Yeah.
Was that a hard one for you to come up with?
It's sort of, once that line, like, I just knew that was the right line, and it only took me a few days to really write, because I had such specific images from, really, that it is easier when you have really clear images from your own experience, I think.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I know how those travel.
Yeah.
Travel romances.
Yeah,
be quite,
I mean, they're very nice.
And wonderful,
yeah.
And yeah. You know they are passing.
Yeah.
So. Now you've described yourself as shy, but you obviously have picked a public career, mm-hmm. and you're starting to perform more. How has that been for you?
Here it's been great. I mean, this is a really supportive place, and I definitely feel, having met other great musicians around here that have been encouraging, that I feel safe kind of having more fun with it, and then playing with musicians in a live performance makes you feel okay, like you've got backup, you know, and I think performing solo and being kind of shy about that is really hard, and now I think it's practice. You get a little more comfortable.
You know what? Some people stay shy all the time. I saw Joni Mitchell once, and she kept her back to the audience.
Oh, wow.
The whole
okay.
concert. This was years ago.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And she is so shy still, I've heard.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess it's my goal. I mean, I'm really trying to work on it because I try to take note when I go to performances, like, what's moving to me about this? What am I responding to? And it's often people that are really claiming their space. They know they're there to share something with you, and like Billy Bragg at the State Theater was such a great, not that I'm ever going to be Billy Bragg in terms of just that level of boldness or confidence, but I always respond to that.
You so like the connection that people can make. Yeah, it's quite strong and amazing.
Yeah,
when
it can be really transforming if you're a part of that in the audience or on, you know, so I definitely... That's a goal of mine.
And are you working on some stuff right now? We only have about a minute left.
Okay. I'm doing a third subscription series. So that's the first song comes out in February.
Oh, great.
So I'm working on that. And I'm also going to be teaching some students in Schuyler County, where Montour Falls is, as part of the series, because that's an important goal, too, I think, just to allow music
to take
be accessible for those, you know. I was lucky to have lessons growing up, so.
Yeah, I think the arts is a very important thing for all people.
Yeah,
so
totally.
I'm all for it. That's great.
Yeah.
Can you quickly give us a contact?
Sure. It's emilyarin.com, and that's EmilyArin. So that's the best way. You can email from the site.
Great.
Okay.
Great. Well, Emily Arin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
it's
you.
It's been a pleasure to meet you.
And thank you for inviting me.
And welcome.
Great. Thanks. Okay.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.